The scripture lesson this morning reading is from Genesis 12, 1 through 9, from the New Revised Standard Version. If anyone has ever moved before, you can certainly relate to these words. The call of Abram. Now the Lord said to Abram, who we also know as Abraham, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who you bless, and the ones who curses you I will curse, and in all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took his wife Sarah and his brother's son Lot, and all the possessions that they had gathered, and the persons whom they had acquired in Haran, and they set forth to go to the land of Canaan. When they had come to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built there an altar to the Lord, who had appeared to him. From there he moved on to the hill country, on to the east to Bethel, and pitched his tent. With Bethel on the west, and Ai on the east, and there he built an altar to the Lord, and invoked the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on by stages toward the Negev. The word of God. Thanks be to God.
When I was a sophomore in college 100 years ago, I did a spring term in Jamaica. I know that sounds more like spring break, but it wasn't that part of Jamaica. It was rural Jamaica, back in the Blue Mountains. Could we have the picture so I have proof? Yeah. And they are just as sweet as they look. Oh my gosh. Now, it was a class for college, so each of us students on the trip had our own independent study that we were working on, but as a group, we were working on a couple of mission projects. And one was the very glamorous project of digging a pit for a latrine. They are very, very deep. And the second one was bringing up stone and laying stone out so concrete could be poured for a preschool that they were going to construct in the community, in this village of Woburn Lawn. Now, this place was different than anywhere I'd ever been to, which was easy because I grew up in small town Michigan and went to a college in small town Michigan. And the most I'd traveled was Florida and California, but that didn't constitute going to another culture exactly. So this was a total mind-blown experience of being in a country, in the part of the country where the rural poverty was so intense. When we arrived and we saw the people's homes, they were like huts with metal roofs, and there was no kitchen in them. The outdoors was the kitchen. The health department would shut them down. But they would have a fire pit and then a kettle over that. And when they cooked chicken, every single piece of that chicken was in there. So when you were having your stew, you might get a chicken foot, which was a delicacy. So, of course, I passed it on to the person next to me because I wanted them to have that delicacy. But I made friends with a young man named Royal. Royal was a wonderful young man, and he says, "I want to go to the United States." He said, "It is a beautiful place." He goes, "I have been watching Dallas on TV." Now, for those of you for whom Dallas is too far back, it was a television story about a Texas oil millionaire named J.R. Ewing. So that's the view of our country that he had. And I ended up leaving my sleeping bag with Royal because he didn't have one, but it wasn't my sleeping bag, it was my brother's sleeping bag. And he didn't appreciate my generosity. That experience forever changed me, being in the midst of such a culture. You know, I came back with two major learnings. One was that I would never see the world the same way I had before I went there. I couldn't see it the same way anymore. And the second was how very blessed I was with things I took for granted, and that I could choose not to just feel guilty about that, but to find a way to bless other people with that blessing, which laid the groundwork for most of the other experiences in my life. Have you ever traveled? Jeff has, to New Zealand, and he brought back the language and the song to bless us with. Have you ever lived in a different region of the country? When I married Chris, and he's from Tennessee, and we went down there for the first time, and we were being given a tour by the Daughters of the Confederate Revolution, I thought I knew I was in another culture. And people looked at things differently than I did. Have you ever hosted a foreign exchange student? Or had a coworker who grew up in a different nation? Or a neighbor? Did it change you when you really listened to their stories? Did it change how you saw the world? Abraham, in our Bible reading, was called by God to leave his country, his nation. One of the references that I read said that this story in Genesis 12, the first four verses, is the linchpin of the Bible. I think it's kind of a reboot, since Donna has us in the computer mode, that Genesis 12 and those four verses are a reboot. Dale and Chris have explored the famous passages from Genesis this past month that include both the creation of the earth and the natural world and its creatures by God, and the refusal of those creatures to accept the free gift of God's garden and rather to live by their own fig leaf rules. The result was and is disaster. And the avalanche of evil continues after the pair is expelled from the garden. Because then we come upon two brothers. What are their names? Cain and Abel. And Cain kills his brother Abel out of jealousy. And then, after that, it doesn't stop. There's all kinds of crazy things and cursed things going on, including a man named Lamech, who said he would kill people if they struck him, demanding sevenfold vengeance. So if you slapped him or punched him, he would kill seven people. And the number seven is a number of wholeness, completeness, and entirety. And so his promise would have wiped out the entire planet if he followed it through. This was the state of the world. So little wonder that the flood became necessary to cleanse the world of such harm. And Noah is chosen to survive. The flood comes. All life is blotted out, save that boat body bobbing on the raging seas. And when the waters recede and the various birds have done their work of discerning the dry land, Noah hops from the ark, sacrifices a whole burnt offering. Which animal did he offer up? Sorry, that's one of those rabbit holes I go down. So he creates and he sacrifices a burnt offering to God, and God smells the pleasing odor and then announces that never again will I curse the land of humankind For even though the inclination of the human heart is evil from youth, God withholds divine anger in the face of terrible shortcomings of the human creatures. That is what we call grace. That's grace. And those human shortcomings continue all the way through and including the story we know as the Tower of Babel, chapter 11. Yes, it also ended badly. If you haven't read it, you can read it now. After the tower story, God's hope for fruitfulness, multiplication, and earth filling, which he blessed and sent out as good in Genesis 1, has again fallen into pieces. And that leads us to God's next attempt to reconstitute the world of shalom, the shalom that a couple weeks ago Dale laid out and defined and inspired us with. The shalom that God had in mind from the first and that we've been focusing on this month in this sermon series, the well-being we are meant for. So God tries a reboot. We arrive with God and Abraham and Sarah at Genesis chapter 12, and God now heads off to one particular land and points to one person to make the earth whole again. Could we have the scripture up there? Now, the Lord said to Abraham, "Go from your country, your kindred, and your father's house to the land that I will show you." He must leave country and kindred, his family, and the house of his own father, which really meant, because his father was long gone, was the estate where he had grown up, the land that had been theirs that they'd been developing in that agrarian society, which meant he was leaving his wealth to go to a land he had never seen before. No reason is given for Abram's choice. The reason for the choice has nothing to do with Abram and everything to do with God. For God's special concerns for the world, God's desire for shalom. "I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, so that you will be a blessing." Huge implications are locked into that sentence. Great. The word great can mean large, can it? It was great big thing, but great can also mean important. Great can mean significant. God's blessing is crucial if Abram and Sarah are to perform this appointed task. Abram's very name, his existence, his person will become great. Indeed, three world religions are rooted in Abraham: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. So indeed his name became great. But that greatness will not consist of power or fame or wealth or status. We're not wearing Abraham t-shirts, are we? Huh. True greatness in this story results in blessing, in passing on to others what God has so freely given to you, given to us. "I will bless those who bless you, but those who curse you I will curse, and through you all the tribes of the ground," or families of the earth, "will be blessed." God has given Abram the task of reconstituting the broken world of Babel and Noah and Cain and Adam and Eve. Somehow, in the very life of this one couple, the world has hope again. The remainder of the Bible story and Bible stories will be one attempt after another to reconstitute a broken world. God will be persistent and creative with divine ideas that God hopes will at last lead to shalom. And for us Christians, God's best attempt was the gift of Jesus. A gift that began a garden defiled and ended in another garden just before a cruel death and crucifixion and an astonishing new life, resurrection. But it all begins with Abram and Sarah, and the hoped for blessing ones. This wanting to bless the world kind of sounds like some verses in John 3, doesn't it? 3:17. Indeed, God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved through him, that the world might be blessed through him. In the kingdom, the shalom will come amongst us all. As a Christ follower, God follower, I too must accept that I'm blessed and that I, like Abram, can become great, in that the greatness intended by God is not that all good things are going to happen to me. Becoming great in God's economy does not mean wealth, power, fame. Greatness in God's economy means becoming a blessing to other people, a blessing to other nations. For example, it means not just making financial investments that gather the most money for my retirement, but also monitoring whether those investments are creating curses. To make sure that my retirement, when I build it up, is not burdening other people or other nations via unjust labor practices, environmental dangers, or manufacturing the weapons of war. Ouch. I'm in my 60s. Retirement's coming over the peak. And I don't know about you, but taking God and my call to be a blessing into my retirement funds is difficult for me. I easily move to rationalizing that, Jane, that just isn't how investment works. That isn't how the world works, right? It's never going to change, so why should you be limiting your future when nobody else is going to? I start looking around and it gets downright depressing. Taking the call to be a blessing into the big stuff like my retirement or our nation's behavior in the world just feels unrealistic, doesn't it? How does a nation become a source of blessing? I mean, that's nice on Sundays, but really, how does a nation become a source of blessing? How does a nation reach for God's shalom? We would be losers. We would lose wealth. We would lose power. How can I, even as one person, make any difference in the machine of shalom-destroying systems that rule our world? Researching for this sermon the last couple of weeks, I found myself angry. I found myself in a depressing space and cursing Dale and Chris for assigning me this week to preach. Lucky for Chris, he was gone. But he came home. But God, right? But blessing, right? I have had this quote. Would you turn to the quote, please? I've had this quote on my refrigerator for the past 5 years to remind me of my best created self, to remind me of what it means to be created in the image of God, to remind me of what my purpose in life is. Living is all about making choices without knowing which choice is the right choice. The best you can do is choose that action you believe best furthers your mission to be a blessing to all the families of the earth. Would you speak that with me? Living is all about making choices without knowing which choice is the right choice. The best you can do is choose that action you believe best furthers your mission to be a blessing to all the families of the earth. A week ago, I was listening to a radio interview, and I learned the full story of one woman, just one woman, who made a global difference through gathering women together to pray. Leah Gbaoui. Leah Gbaoui. She is Liberian. Liberia is a country on the African continent. General Charles Taylor led an armed uprising against the government of President Samuel Doe, which ensued the First Civil War. The First, Second Liberian Civil War and the Second Liberian Civil Wars were separated by a brief ceasefire, but they went on for 14 years, tearing the country apart. Meanwhile, after the ceasefire, what brought on the Second Civil War was that President Taylor led his country into war by sending his soldiers into nearby countries and creating turmoil with violence, so that then those bordering countries would send people into Liberia, and there were forces fighting on the land. And this was going on, the young men were dying and were gone, so then the combatants went and got boys, children, and put guns in their hands and taught them how to kill without remorse. And the war wreaked havoc on women, because much of the violence was focused on the women, using women's bodies as field for war. President Taylor refused to negotiate with his opponents, and it appeared that Liberia would collapse into irretrievable chaos. Could we have Lema? Lema Gbaoui. Lema Gbaoui was a single mother of four who became a social worker. You know how well paid they are. Became a social worker during the First Civil War so that she could help the people in her country recover from the trauma of the war. During the Second Civil War, she helped organize an interreligious coalition of Christian and Muslim women called the Women of Liberia Mass Action for Peace Movement. They were the Women in White. They were the Women in White. And these thousands of women staged pray-ins and nonviolent protests, demanding reconciliation and the resuscitation of high-level peace talks. And Charles Taylor underestimated them, and they got into the presidential palace, and they didn't leave until he agreed to return to peace talks. And so the peace talks were taking place in Accra, Ghana. And again, Gbaoui and the Women in White went at a point when the talks were stalled. They were getting nowhere. And the women circled the building, and they were praying, and they had their signs. And at one point, they threatened. that they would strip naked. They would not allow the men out. And the men in that culture, that would have been great shame for them to come out and encounter the women in that way. So they stayed in. And after a few weeks, the impossible happened. General Taylor resigned and went into exile. A peace agreement was signed. The women in white, led by Gabawi, a simple mother and social worker, then smoothed the path for the first ever female head of state on the African continent, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Lema Gabawi knew and knows the God of Shalom, the God who blessed her to be a blessing. She says, "I doubt if without God I would be where I am. That's why I'm able to endure some of the things that I endure. That's why I'm able to keep going. I see it as a call from God." How can one person make a difference in steering creation toward God's blessing? Well, Lema Gabawi, again in her words, say you do one thing. You write an article to create awareness, and someone is mobilized to do something about it. You chipped off a tiny piece of that ball. Is it whole again? It's not whole anymore. So imagine if all of us were surrounding the problems of the world in this big ball. Some people would be creating awareness. Some would be mobilizing to action. By the time we all do what we can do, it's not a whole ball anymore. Maybe 1% of it has been chipped off. You know what you've done? You've saved 1% of the world from a catastrophe. Like Martin Luther King's speeches and nonviolent protests. Like Rosa Parks. Let us not forget the monumental changes that our country had that took place via the nonviolent actions of the civil rights movement. Like Pete Seeger singing peace songs. Like Greta Thunberg, a child speaking out. Like Bonhoeffer during Nazi power when he was imprisoned, was in jail, still blessing with his resistance and his words. And like Nelson Mandela when he was freed from prison, choosing not to wreak vengeance on his captors or the majority rule in his country, but to become a leader that brought blessing to both the black people of South Africa and the white people and to the nations surrounding. The impossible possibleness of God's shalom happens. Berlin walls fall down. Apartheid in South Africa unravels. The United States sends out the Peace Corps all over the world in countries like our own Alec Andreka to teach and build and heal and spread blessing. We do that. Yeah, no, you and I are not Bonhoeffers. We're not Mandelas or even Alec Andreka. Or are we? Living is all about making choices without knowing which choice is the right choice. The best we can do is choose that action we believe best furthers our mission to be a blessing to all of the families of the earth. May it be so.
My name is Jeffrey Cobb, director of music here at Central Church. I just wanted to give a very brief introduction about the choir anthem, just because you're going to hear a language you may not recognize. This morning's anthem is a Maori folk song that I learned when I was in New Zealand. It's a simple little round that they teach to children. It's based on Corinthians 13:13. So you're going to hear some traditional New Zealand instrumentation as well. We've got our good friends Stu and Phil joining us on guitar and ukulele. So this is E Turo Nia Mea. Thank you.